Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend, because my name is America.
What do we do when we don't know what to do? What do we do when powerful forces threaten to overwhelm us? We think we're going to get clobbered. What do we do when there seems to be no way out? We feel trapped. What do we do when it feels like there is nothing we can do? Let's think about that today on The Prism of America's Education. I'm Pastor Rick Stevens, and I'm in for Karen Schoen. Karen is away on a secret mission to mysterious places, meeting with faceless people. Well, that sounds a lot better than me simply saying she had some stuff she had to do, so you're stuck with me. Well, either way, you're stuck with me. You may have heard me on some of the previous broadcasts when Karen has invited me to make a contribution. And today I'm sitting in to talk with you about some important things, and hopefully we can carry on the great tradition she has started. Some of you may remember hearing my voice. I'm a pastor in Cape Coral, Florida. I'm the pastor of Diplomat Wesleyan Church. I've been a pastor for a lot of years. Actually been at this church since January of 1997. So I've learned my way around Florida and had a great time here. I've also, in the recent years, been part of the Florida Citizens Alliance. I helped get that organization started. And in a few minutes, we'll talk to a couple of people from the Florida Citizens Alliance that will be illustrations of how we at the Florida Citizens Alliance have worked very hard over the years to bring solutions to the problems that people find in K-12 education in Florida. You know, anybody can find a problem. You can walk down the street and find a dozen problems. It's not hard to find a problem. But at the Florida Citizens Alliance, we work very hard to find solutions to the problems that people bring to our attention. We don't want to complain about things without developing a solution that we can implement and we can help implement to solve the problem. So today, one of the things that I'd like to do is encourage you to begin thinking that way in your community. It may not relate to education. It may relate to some other issue that you want to get involved in. But I want to encourage you to take seriously the possibility that you could be the solution by bringing solutions to problems. So to set the framework for that conversation a little bit, I want you to think about the difference between politics and citizenship. For a long time, I've been hearing church leaders, other pastors, sincere Christians say politics. Oh, we can't get into politics. We can't bother with that. We have other things to do. We just can't get involved in politics. And sometimes people think politics is a dirty business, and sometimes it is. And so they say, well, we can't possibly risk getting ourselves dirty in politics. Well, I think one of the things that we've looked at over the recent years is that that's the way people marginalize your voice, is they get you to think it's politics and you don't have any place in that. And I want to suggest to you, and I want to urge you to think about it this way. It's citizenship. It's not politics. What we do is part of our citizenship responsibility. You know, politics, as I often explain to people, is the pursuit of power. And it's legitimate. People pursue political power so they can do good things. And I'm glad when they do good things. They also pursue political power to do bad things. And that's a problem. And that's why we need, as citizens, we need to be involved, because as citizens, we consider citizenship the pursuit of the very best government. And so we work to bring right principles to bear on those kinds of things. And what I mean by right principles is that we understand some things are right and some things are wrong. And we need to remember that every decision one of our elected representatives makes, every vote they cast, it is a decision of right or wrong. They've decided this is either right or this is wrong. And so we don't pursue the best government to be political. I don't think we need to be political. I don't encourage you to be political. I encourage you to be principled. We have to have principles that matter, and we have to pursue that which is right. and avoid getting caught up in the politics of it. Yes, I know, and I wouldn't argue about this with anyone. It is a political environment we have to work in sometimes. There's no question about that. But just because we work in a political environment doesn't mean we can't be principled and put our principles above the politics. And we have tried to do that, and I hope you'll see some of that when we talk with the representatives from the Florida Citizens Alliance. But I want us to really give serious consideration to how we respond to these times and how we respond when it looks like there's nothing we can do. And so when I've come across these kinds of frustrating times, and when I hear people say, well, nobody listens to me, and I get all of that, and I understand all of that, and yet we can't let any of that discourage us. And so I was thinking today, what can I learn about how to respond to times like these when it seems like everything's against us and when things aren't going the way many of us would like them to go, when we see policies and decisions that are being made that certainly are not godly? How do we respond to those kind of things? So I want to sound like a pastor for a little bit, because that's what I am. And I never thought I'd be this guy, but guess what? You push a button and preaching comes out. So hang on. We're going to talk about some important things. And I want to focus on the story of David and Goliath. And when I was thinking about this, I thought, well, everybody knows that story. We don't need to talk about that again. Everybody will just think that, okay, we know that. Let's move on to something deep and spiritual. Well, one of the things that I noticed when I went back to think about David and Goliath and their story from 1 Samuel 17 was that when David arrived on the scene and there were these two armies facing off, the Philistines and the army of Israel, and there was a champion, Goliath, coming out to challenge Israel to put out a champion so they could fight the battle, and whoever won would be considered the winner, the winning army would be considered represented by that champion. Well, David comes along. He hadn't been there. He wasn't part of the army. He had been back home taking care of his flocks for his father. And David comes up and he answers or asks a very important question. He says, who is this guy that defies the armies of the living God? Now what David was really saying is, who does Goliath think he is? He's wrong to defy God. And we need to think about that. Is there anything in our communities that is wrong that defies God? See, that's where we need to think about that which is right and that which is wrong. And David recognized immediately this was defying God, and it should not, could not be allowed to stand. So what's David do? He says, hey, don't worry, I'll take care of this. I'll fight him. I'll go down and I'll take him on, because he's wrong to attack God, and I'll stand up for God. You know, I wonder if God is looking for someone in your community that will stand up and say, I'm on God's side, and I'll fight for him. You know, you may not think you're a Goliath. You may think you're just a David. But, well, not to give the end of the story away, but you know the end. David won. He stood up for God. You know, don't spend any time asking God to be on your side. Determine to be on God's side and stand up for that which is right in the face of that which is wrong. Can't we do that? Isn't that what God expects of us to do that? David had it right when he said that Goliath is defying the armies of the living God. You know, we tend to read that story and we think it was a battle between Israel and the Philistines. But the way the story is told, it was very clear. It wasn't simply a battle between two groups of people. It was a battle that put God on the line. And David recognized immediately that Goliath was defying God. You see, this is where we've fallen into the trap, too many of us, of thinking that the issues of our day are political, and so we can't be involved in them. Well, the Bible talks about all the issues, and God doesn't surrender any part of his creation to anyone for any reason. And we need to begin to think about these things that go on as defying God. You know, years ago, we considered, and I guess it tells you something that I've lived a little while, that we considered killing babies a moral issue. And now today, sometimes we hear people say, well, that's a political issue. We can't get involved in that. Well, doesn't killing babies defy God? Doesn't the Bible teach us that children are a treasure, a gift from God? So we need to think about that. Those who advocate for abortion and killing babies are really defying the living God. We need people who will stand up for God. Think about all of this stuff that's going on over gender identity and all of the related things. Now, isn't that really denying that God created people in His image, male and female? Isn't that a failure to recognize that when we see a boy or a girl, we're looking at someone created in the image of God Himself? And doesn't denying that creation, that beautiful creation, doesn't that defy the living God? And shouldn't we stand up against that? Take it a step farther, and we're going to talk about some of this as it relates to public schools, but we're discovering that our public schools are requiring our children to study godless philosophies and worse things than described by godless philosophies in our public schools. And when our kids are required to do that, isn't that defying God? You see, David understood that in the story of Goliath and his conflict there, he understood that what was really happening was a battle between right and wrong, between good and evil, between following God or defying God. Well, David took up the challenge. He was willing to do what it took to stand up for God against Goliath. And he said about Goliath, "Well, Goliath, you're coming at me with all these weapons of war. You have a sword and a spear, a javelin. You're coming against me with all of that, but I'm coming against you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel's armies, whom you have defied." See, there it is again. There it is again. And as clearly as it could possibly be, David is saying, "I'm standing up for God." You know, some of us look around and we think, well, somebody needs to do something. And yeah, that's true. Somebody does, but maybe the somebody is us. Well, you know, we're tempted to say, well, I can't do that much. Nobody disagrees with that. I think we all realize that we can't do everything, but each of us can do something. None of us can take on every issue in every place at every time, but all of us can do something to stand up for right, to stand up for God. All of us have some friends who would agree with us and who would be willing to help us, and we just have to start. When we started the Florida Citizens Alliance, and I've referred to them more than once, we didn't have any standing to do anything. We weren't known. Nobody knew us. When we first started going to Tallahassee to talk to members of the Florida State House and the Florida Senate, we were just people showing up, and they were listening sort of, but most of the time they didn't want to hear what we had to say. They didn't want to address our concerns. They just more or less dismissed us. Well, we weren't discouraged by that. We understood that we have to keep at it, and we did. You know, we didn't have any political power. Probably most of us having this conversation today don't have any political power. It's really not about political power. It's about willingness to stand up and to do what we need to do. So I sat in a number of offices of the representatives and senators, and our team would have conversations with them, and we could tell when we went out that they really didn't want to think about it. In those days, we were talking about Common Core, and we'll have some more about Common Core a little later in the broadcast today in the program, but they didn't want to hear what we had to say. And we found that a little puzzling because so many parents had been talking about it. Well, later we found out some of the reasons why they didn't want to listen, but just because they didn't at first just simply step up and do what we wanted, we didn't stop. We continued on. And I know one of my friends would hear some of us talk about some of these things, and she would regularly say, "Well, why can't they just do the right thing?" Well, did you hear that question? That's what we're talking about, getting our representatives to do the right thing. And I would have to smile and say, "Well, you're exactly right. It does seem like they ought to do the right thing, but it's a little more complicated than that." And we'd talk some about some of the complications. and some of the difficulties. And I would say to people, well, we don't really want it to be too easy to get these things changed, because if it was too easy to get them changed, then the people that want to change the things you don't want changed would find it easy to do some of these things we don't want them to do. So we learned to embrace the fact that it was going to be a challenge, and that was okay. We understood we didn't have political power. Really, we didn't want political power, because we determined from the beginning that we were going to be about principles, not about politics. Yes, it's a political environment. You heard me say that. Yes, we have to understand the dynamics of the politics, because that affects the decision makers in very significant ways. But we decided that we were going to work on doing the right thing, because we want right to prevail. That which is morally correct needs to prevail. We want liberty and justice for all. We want the government to secure the rights given to us by our Creator. See, that's at the heart of American government, is that the government needs to secure our rights for us, not give them to us. They never give them to us. Those come from God. Their responsibility is to protect those rights, to secure those rights, so no one takes them away. And that's an important principle, and you can advocate for those kinds of things at any level. So think about where you are. Think about your own community. Think about how easy or difficult it is for you to get involved. For us, it's a long way to Tallahassee, but we tackled it, and away we go. You may not tackle a state-level issue. You may tackle a local issue. That's fine. Get involved with your city council or your county commission. Whatever opportunity you have, think about it. And remember, it's not about politics, so don't be discouraged by that. It's important to remember it's not about politics. It's about standing up when anyone defies what is right and when anyone defies God. That's what really matters. And it's a marathon, not a sprint. So don't be discouraged. Just hang in there. Keep working. One of these days, you're going to discover some good things really happen. They've happened for us at the Florida Citizens Alliance and in the state of Florida. There are still things that need to be improved. We still keep working on them. But the good news is there is hope, there is help, and things do happen when we stand up for right. So who's going to stand? Are you willing to stand up when someone defies God? Are you willing to stand on principle and do the right things for the people in your community, for the people that are counting on someone to stand up for them? That's really what we're talking about. And we're going to give some examples in a little while from the Florida Citizens Alliance. And coming up on the program, I want you to meet Keith Flaw and Dominique Clemens, two of my colleagues from the Florida Citizens Alliance. For several years, we've been working to bring solutions to the problems we see in K-12 public schools in Florida. And again, solutions. We don't talk about problems. We talk about solutions, because we want to be a positive force for change. We want to help have answers, not be people who complain about problems. Well, I'm Pastor Rick Stevens. I'm in this week for Karen Schoen. She's out on her secret mission doing stuff, and we're filling the gap for her. This is the Prism of America's Education, and we'll be back after this break.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Prism of America's Education. I'm Pastor Rick Stevens, in for Karen Schoen, who's away on a top secret mission taking care of important things. She'll be back next week. But I'm here today, and I want to introduce you to a couple of friends of mine and colleagues from the Florida Citizens Alliance. We hope that the story of the Florida Citizens Alliance will inspire you and give you some ideas for how you might find solutions in your area to advance the cause of better education for our kids. And we don't think you'll do things exactly the way we do, but that's not the point. The point is to give you an idea of something you might accomplish. So I want to introduce you to Keith Flaw. He's the founder and co-managing director of the Florida Citizens Alliance. Welcome to the program, Keith.
Good morning, Pastor Rick. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, thanks for joining us. We know your perspective is quite insightful and look forward to hearing from you. And I also want the audience to meet Dominique Clemens. Dominique joined us last year as our operations manager. She's a recent graduate of Hillsdale College and brings a fresh perspective to things and has started some good initiatives for the Florida Citizens Alliance. So welcome to the program, Dominique.
Thank you, Pastor Ed.
I want to start by giving an illustration of a problem that we see in education, and it's not just in Florida. This is a problem that we've discovered from Las Vegas, Nevada, actually. And there's a young man there named William, who is a high school senior. William has been working very hard to have a good education in spite of family difficulties. He suffered the loss of his father at a very young age. His mother is unemployed and disabled. William himself works 35 hours a week at a local Taco Bell just to help the family get by. And they've, in spite of all of this, worked hard to help the kids succeed. And William's mother has worked especially hard to get her children a top education. And so William found a position at one of the top charter schools in Las Vegas. Well, he's done very well through his academic career, and he's now a senior. But this year, during his senior year, he was confronted with a problem that he was not expecting. They gave no warning about. But he discovered he's required to take and pass a class that's reportedly called civics, but the title is Sociology of Change. The real basis for sociology of change is the idea found in critical race theory. Some of you may have heard about that. And the teacher makes no apology. She forthrightly says her students are supposed to be social justice warriors. Well, the heart of the class is that there are privileged people and oppressed people there, then we need to identify what's going on and fix the problem. Well, the theory, critical race theory, says that if you're white, male, heterosexual, or Christian, you are intrinsically privileged and oppressive. And that has to change according to this class and this theory. And so students are required to deny those things and to relearn their perspective on life and all of those issues. And it's not just enough to study the theory for what it says. They are required to fight back against these things in their own families, in their religious beliefs and practices, in their race, in their gender identities, really all of their life. Well, William immediately recognized that this was not appropriate. He had been raised to understand what Dr. Martin Luther King said, that people should be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. Well, that's very interesting for William because by all outward appearances, William is black, or pardon me, William is white. His mother is black and his late father was white. William has white skin, green eyes. So he's put in a very uncomfortable position because he's the only student that appears white in the class. Well, William's mother was furious. They started fighting all this stuff and went to the school and asked for an exception, an accommodation, an alternative. The school doubled down, said, no, you can't have any of that. We're not going to do that. And eventually, they kept pushing back and pushing back. The school failed William. And remember, this is a required class for his senior year, and he needs a good grade to get into his university. They failed William, and they expelled him indefinitely. So a couple days before Christmas, William and his mother filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against the school to redress their grievances. Well, that's one solution. Keith, I wonder what you would say to a parent in Florida if they face something like this. And indeed, indoctrination is going on all across the country. But is there a better solution?
There certainly is, we think, here in Florida. Back in 2017, a scholarship program called the Hope Scholarship was passed. Florida, by the way, has five very effective scholarship programs, several oriented for minorities, for disabled students, and of course, the Hope Scholarship. Let me briefly explain how creative and aggressive the Hope Scholarship is. It has three major tenets that were added to the concept of bullying. Back in 2017, there were some 25 legal definitions that fit under the concept of bullying. The state in 2017 added three new elements to that: threat, intimidation, and harassment. The second thing they did was they made it applicable to anybody or any person on school property or a school-sponsored event. And the third and most powerful thing they did was they put, it was a victim's bill, and they put the victim in charge. So if a parent believes, she doesn't have to prove anything. In this case, she doesn't have to prove that it's harming her child. She just has to believe it is. And so in Florida, she would be able to go to the state website, print out a one-page notification form, document the incident, which in this Nevada case was very clear, document the incident, and immediately, once she takes that to the principal of school and signs it, she becomes eligible for a HOPE scholarship, a stipend, if you will. It comes in two flavors. One is to pay transportation costs to send her child to another government school, or the other, and the one we focus on most, is you get up to an $8,000 annual scholarship to send your child to a private school of your choice.
This is really amazing. And I hope people get the full effect of that, because what's really true about this scholarship, as we've discovered, is that no one can tell the parent no. If the parent says, my child has experienced this, that's all it takes. And Keith went by that pretty quickly when he said, puts the power in the hands of the parents, but that is really significant. And the principal can't tell them, no, you don't qualify. Nobody can tell them no. It's because the parents understand that their children matter and they look out for their kids. And that's significant. And we hope more parents will come to understand that. Now, Dominique, I know you've done some work on another website that we've developed. Really, I shouldn't say we. You've done all the work and had the vision for it, called libertyscholar.org. Now, there's more information about the HOPE Scholarship there. Is that something that people should go to libertyscholar.org to find out about, so they'd understand the details?
Most definitely. I think, you know, the HOPE Scholarship, we have it in Florida, but it's something that people all over the country should be looking into and trying to replicate in their own states. So we created, with Florida Citizens Alliance, kind of an arm off of Florida Citizens Alliance called Liberty Scholar. You know, with Florida Citizens Alliance, we're really fighting the indoctrination that's going on right now, but we also have to find solutions. And so with Liberty Scholar, it's a solution for parents who are looking for alternatives. So you can find, you know, it's really a resource hub of scholarship information specifically tailored for Florida. So you can find the five Florida scholarships. We have homeschool resources, and that is a, you know, step-by-step on how to start homeschooling and also why parents should start homeschooling right now. It's absolutely so important that parents wake up and understand what's happening to their kids in these schools. You know, we can see the case in Nevada. These students are going to school and really being re-educated to hate America. You know, they're called social justice warriors in their schools. And they're really turning children in America into basically little socialists. And that's kind of the plan right now. And so we really are trying to find solutions, really fight this indoctrination. And one way to do that is to explore the alternatives. So with Liberty Scholar on libertyscholar.org, you can find information on homeschool resources. We also are partnering with other organizations that have, you know, full curriculum, really good, robust classical curriculum for parents to check out. So we have partnered with Classical Conversations and Freedom Project Academy, and we're working on many more so that parents can have kind of a library of resources available to them. And the other thing that we're focusing on as well on Liberty Scholar is, you know, giving parents a little bit of, you know, the information of what's inside the textbook. What are they teaching? The Black Lives Matter Incorporated, the critical race theory. We're doing research on that and trying to make it very clear to parents why they should make the switch, and what kind of indoctrination is taking place in our classrooms.
Well, when I hear you talk about that, it's pretty easy to understand why we should protect our kids from all of these, shall we say, crazy ideas out there. The why is pretty simple, but I'm trying to put myself in the position of a parent, and it seems a little overwhelming to think about homeschooling or some other options. Is there anything at Liberty Scholar that would help parents understand how they really can do this? Are there really resources that support parents? Because parents aren't experts in chemistry. They're experts in their kids. Does Liberty Scholar help them with that, with some of those kind of critical questions that they need answers to?
Definitely. I think, you know, the why question is still important because a lot of parents, I think they see a little bit of what's going on or they hear what's going on, but it really takes that extra push where, and we're seeing this right now with the remote learning or the distance learning, parents are starting to see what's being taught in the classrooms. And parents care about their kids. And so at the end of the day, you know, when they make that decision to take control of their child's education, I believe that every parent absolutely has the ability to do so. On Liberty Scholar, we really just try to give them encouragement. We have a whole video series. It's called Moms to Moms, and it's homeschool moms that give little, you know, pieces of advice to moms that are looking into homeschooling, everything from, you know, how do you do graduation? How do you do sports? You know, different things like that, that are just those unanswered questions and kind of the details behind that. And then we also have, you know, a full page of resources on homeschooling. We have, you know, frequently asked questions about, you know, what are different programs that you could even juggle your full-time job and also be able to educate your child at home. And it's all possible. We really just need parents to make that switch and be determined to take their child's education into their hands.
Well, it kind of sounds like those videos are coaches and coaching for parents who want to give it a try. And sounds like they would answer most every question that might discourage parents from trying. So that's a great resource at libertyscholar.org. And I really do encourage people to check that. It's not just information that helps Floridians, it helps people across the country. And we want to really invite people into that conversation and to get that kind of help. Now, one of the things we keep mentioning is the importance of scholarships. And we talked about the Hope Scholarship, and you mentioned that there were some other scholarships. But these scholarships really play a powerful role in Florida. And back when we had an election for governor here, we discovered in a very convincing and incredible way just how important these scholarship opportunities are. I know, Keith, you focused on that, and you tell the story very well. I've heard you tell it more than once about how that election was won by a very narrow margin, and it was attributed to a very specific policy position that mattered to moms. Can you fill us in on what happened?
Sure. This is the 2018 gubernatorial election here in Florida. The backdrop was we had the fellow who ended up getting elected, Governor DeSantis, who was previously a congressman, veteran, et cetera, running on the Republican side of the equation. And on the Democratic side of the equation, we had an avowed socialist by the name of Gillum. And one of the things that Gillum did very early in the election campaign cycle was to announce his belief that all of our scholarship programs here in Florida were not fair to the kids in traditional schools, and that he was going to cancel them. In Florida, we have about 14 million voters in that 2018 off presidential year election. 8 million voted. Governor DeSantis ended up winning in a runoff or a recount by 33,000 votes. Think about the decimal points behind 33,000 over 8 million. But the interesting thing, one of our think tanks here in Florida, one we work closely with, James Madison Institute, did a study that was published in the Wall Street Journal shortly after the election, trying to figure out what was different, why about the election. And their conclusion, and you can go read it, look it up on the Wall Street Journal. Their conclusion was that all of the usual suspects in both parties, both sides, were pulling on their respective oars. But because Gillum came out so strongly against the scholarship programs, one of which is the tax credit scholarship for low-income families, the DeSantis team was able to go to black pastors in the state who were able to remind black moms that if they voted for the wrong guy, didn't tell them who to vote for, but if they voted for the wrong guy, they would lose, their child would be stuck in poverty forever. Traditionally, in Florida politics, 7% of black moms vote Republican. In that election, it was well over 18%. That shows you the power of letting moms and dads make the choice for their kids. They know best, and you know, with all of Florida scholarships, they become real competition against the static bureaucratic, I call them government schools.
Well, there's no question about it that the parents need to have the opportunities and the power to determine their child's education. And that's such a compelling story that the parents realized, the moms realized what their kids need. And moms know what their kids need. A government bureaucrat or somebody running a school doesn't know their child like they know their child. And so they need the opportunity. And it's just amazing to see what happens when people are given that opportunity and to see how they'll respond. Of course, it also kind of points out the ever-present idea. And we talk about this from time to time because of our work, that elections have consequences, and that this election definitely had consequences. We would not be where we are and some of the improvements in Florida education without the governor's leadership and taking responsibility for that. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that a little bit and the role Florida Citizens Alliance had on helping rid the state of Florida. And it's a work still in progress of this whole business of Common Core. So I hope you'll stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm Pastor Rick Stevens in for Karen Schoen. We've been talking to Keith Flaw and Dominique Clemens from the Florida Citizens Alliance. We'll be back after this break.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference.
Welcome back. We're here on the Prism of America's Education. I'm Pastor Rick Stevens, filling in for your normal host, Karen Schoen. And she'll be back next week and bring you the programming you're used to loving. In the meantime, we've been talking to Keith Flaw and Dominique Clemens from the Florida Citizens Alliance. Keith is the founder and co-managing director of the Florida Citizens Alliance, and Dominique Clemens is the operations manager. She joined us last year and has been doing some innovative and insightful things for us. Well, I mentioned before the break that Florida Citizens Alliance had played a role in Common Core, and playing a role in Common Core goes back a number of years because we started working on this several years ago, and it was when everybody was all upset about it, and we decided to tackle it. And one of the things we learned in the process of that is that it's a marathon, not a sprint, that you got to hang in there and you keep working. But when you keep working, eventually good things happen and solutions come to bear. So with that introduction, Keith, maybe you could give us a little idea of the role the Florida Citizens Alliance played in the Common Core solution in Florida and how it's working so far and where we are in the process and what remains to be done.
Okay, happy to. I'm going to take you back to the election in 2018 that we talked about with the story on black moms. As you recall from that discussion, we had Congressman DeSantis at the time running for governor against a fellow by the name of Gillum. The Florida Citizens Alliance in the preceding 4 or 5 years before that election had grown to be about 60,000 people statewide. And we've been fighting Common Core, as Pastor Rick indicated, for at least 5 years. One of the things that we, one of the ways we influenced that whole discussion was by engaging Governor DeSantis when he was running. Pastor Rick and I had several meetings with him. Our teams across the state would take the opportunity to tell him how bad Common Core was, particularly in the area of math. So fast forward, when he got elected, one of the first things he did was put out an executive order giving our commissioner of education, who's a fellow by the name of Richard Corkman, the charge to get rid of Common Core and replace it with the best standards in the nation. Because of the role we played and the respect that we gained over the prior years, we were invited to participate in that process of replacing those. And the key thing that we did was we brought some really tremendous national experts to the table in both the area of ELA and math. And that became a major influence in what we now believe are the, quote, literally the best standards. Benchmarks for Excellence in Student Thinking is what BEST stands for. And those standards for ELA and math really get back to the basics of reading, writing, math, civics. Actually, in the ELA standards are civics literacy textbooks that the teachers are required to use. So long story short, shortened a bit, but we think now Florida has an excellent foundation. Now, Pastor Rick alluded to the fact that it's just the beginning. Common Core is obviously was much more than just standards. It was curriculum, testing, data mining, all of the above. So now that we have a good set of standards, they're in the process, and every year they do a major subject item. So this year, they're actually, the counties, school districts are actually selecting ELA content. They've gone through extensive training on the new standards, and so they're in the process of reaching out to various bid providers to select textbooks that meet the new standards. I mean, just that's the theory.
You know, it's quite a process, and people sometimes lose sight of the fact that it's not a one and done decision, but there's a lot more to it. And we're continuing to monitor that and watch, and we have had a number of assurances from high level people at the Department of Education that they are going to get this right, and they are going to make sure that the suppliers of the textbooks get it right, and we'll have a real strong strong curriculum to use to support these standards in Florida. So we're optimistic about that. It remains to be seen how it all works out. And there's always a need to be vigilant. We're not naive about that, but we are hopeful and excited about the possibilities of forever getting rid of Common Core and giving our students a better chance to learn. Well, that kind of brings us to the idea of what really is going on in education and what are some of the problems. And I know, Dominique, you were doing some work on that. And one of the things you came up with was that people are missing in their school education a basic understanding of American history. And when you recognize that, you had the idea that we ought to solve that. Maybe you could tell us how you're working to solve that and how it might help parents across the country.
Yes, of course. You know, I think that a lot of students, well, I know that a lot of students are missing out on, you know, the amazing history that our nation has. You know, American history is so fascinating. And I grew up in the public school system, and I really feel like myself and all of my peers missed out on that. We never really got into, you know, the Constitution. That's something that's completely bypassed in American history. And especially today, they're rewriting the textbooks so much that's really just focusing on how oppressive America is. That's what I learned when I was in high school here in Florida, was different ways that America has oppressed women and minorities and people like that. Instead of learning about, you know, how we are the greatest country in the history of the world, really, in terms of freedom and the things that our founders did. And so I really think that young students are craving good education, true history, real stories. And I think the Constitution is just a phenomenal document that we should be teaching our children. So something that we are doing on libertyscholar.org is we've created a series of videos, short videos. They're 3 to 4 minutes long each. And we're covering the Bill of Rights. So that's the first 10 amendments in the Constitution. And so we kind of go through each one and talk about, you know, the history of it and why it was relevant back then and why it's still relevant today for each one of the first 10 amendments. And I think that it's really, you know, it's a great way for even adults to go back and refresh their memories, but also for young adults, teenagers to kind of get in there and understand a little bit better of our Constitution. And we're going to continue working on these videos. We have a lot more videos in the process of coming out, and they'll be related to the Constitution, related to American history, because I think that that is the one subject out of many that's really, really lacking in our public schools today.
Isn't that amazing that American history is lacking in our American public schools? That's just mind-boggling. Keith, what do you think about that?
I want to make one other resource that Dominique has provided aware to the listening public. Back in high school, Dominique did a white paper, her thesis, on education in America and how did we get here. She's got on our website, Liberty Scholars, she's got actually two versions of just an amazing video, Education in America, How Do We Get Here? And for those who don't like 30-minute videos, she shortened it down to a 15-minute version. But I really urge listeners, if you really want a serious background and understanding of how did we get here in America with our education system, she's done an outstanding job. So just wanted to plug that.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, because people do need to have exposure to those kinds of things. And really, when we think about education, many of us, we think about going to school, we remember a favorite teacher. When we get out of school, we tend to remember the good times, not the bad times. And so often we have these warm, fuzzy feelings about school, and it's sometimes difficult for us to realize that there's more going on than we know. And Keith, I know you really delve into what's really going on in education. And people sometimes don't realize that these are monopolies, these public schools, and they aren't necessarily driven for the well-being of students. In fact, many times they aren't, even though they say it's all about the students. Maybe you could give us a little bit of background on what really goes on that doesn't jump out at us when we first think about schools.
Certainly. I'm going to, when we got into this business heavily, going to Tallahassee, meeting with legislators, meeting with school board members, et cetera, we kept being told, despite what we were hearing from parents and grandparents, how great our schools were here in Florida. So we've done two major pieces of work over the years. We've been updating it, the one I'm going to mention first. We did an analysis in Florida, and I absolutely believe this is relevant across the country, but we did an analysis in Florida that took how Florida grades their schools and compared it to a national report that's published every year, pretty well respected, U.S. News and World Report, and they rate and rank on reading, math, and college readiness every public high school in the nation. And so we did a comparison over each of the last 4 years, comparing how those schools were doing on nationally normed test results. That's key. The U.S. News and World Report uses national tests versus Florida and its use of its proprietary Florida Standards FSA test. What we found is fascinating. 50% of our kids in Florida, and the focus was high school, but 50% of our kids in Florida cannot read and do math at grade level. And yet the system here in Florida, the school system, is telling parents that 56% of our schools are A and B schools, and we're graduating across the state close to 90% of our students. How can that, and there was such a dichotomy. And what, by delving into this, what we learned is in the proprietary grading system here in Florida, I'm probably a lot older than many of you listening to this show, but when I went to school, if you got below a 75 on a test, you got an F. Today in Florida, on 8 major factors of reading, writing, math, social studies, the different gap measurements they have in place, 62% or better is an A. Let me say that again, 62% or better is an A. The difference between a C and a D, you get a D if your score on those 8 factors is 39%, you get a C if it's 40. So literally, it reinforces the fact that half of our kids can't read and write, and yet we're kidding ourselves about how great the education is. So that's one element of the work that we did, started 4 or 5 years ago, that has given us some real respect when we go to Tallahassee and we talk to legislators, because all they were getting beforehand was the one side, the propaganda side of the equation.
And we should mention that before we get away from those reports, that if people would like to see an example of the kind of thing we put together for each of the school districts in Florida. In Florida, a school district is a school district because it's a county. So our school districts are divided up by law and into counties. And if you go to our other website, goflca.com, you can find there the reports that we've prepared for the various counties in Florida. And it'll give you an example of how we've compared and to understand ourselves. And of course, that information, that data is available to people to use for their area as well. So you could find that as well. But an example is there at goflca.com. So if you want to find out, go there and find and check that out. Now, the other thing that it's become a cliche, and I've used it all the time, that so many things are driven by power and money. And we've seen that in education. And maybe, Keith, you'd talk just a little bit about the monopolistic nature of education and the forces behind what's going on, and what it would take really to bring about some significant reform, because we're working on all of those kind of things, and it's a challenge.
And when I'm talking to groups, I usually start with a challenging statement. Some people believe, most people do, and I make the affirmative statement that our public schools are union-driven government monopolies. Most people, particularly parents, are quick to say, yeah, that's right. And I think more and more doing it now that COVID is allowing them to see what's actually being taught. So so where do we go from here? The question I then ask is, how do you reform a government monopoly? How do you reform a government monopoly? And the only answer we come up with is you can't. You have to break it. And the way you break it is through better competition. And that's why the school districts are so protective of competition. Everything we do at the Florida Citizens Alliance is focused on expanding the scholarships. As Dominique mentioned with Liberty Scholar, we have major effort there to help parents understand that it really is not that difficult to homeschool your child for a much, much better outcome for your child's future. So competition at the end of the day is the only way, in our opinion, to break the stranglehold of the unions.
Well, and the teachers union is a whole other subject that we could get into a little bit. It's kind of discouraging because we all know some teachers and we all had some great teachers, but the teachers that we know and love are different from the teachers union that doesn't work for the well-being of either the teachers or the students. And so we would want everybody to be alert to that and pay attention to that. It's sad to have to say it that way, but it really is true. And we've seen it in a number of cases across the country. Recently, we saw the head of one of the unions from the Chicago area, vacationing on a tropical island while saying, no, the students shouldn't go back to school. Well, that's just a small example of some of the outrageous stuff that goes on. Dominique, let's come back to you and give you the last word, maybe on Liberty Scholar, and maybe you'd like to say something else that's there that we haven't talked about, or remind us of how we can help people around the country get a better education for their children.
Well, I think, you know, the most important thing right now is just to not be shy to talk about this stuff, because it really is happening in every single school. It's, you know, this kind of indoctrination has been infiltrating our schools for many, many years. And right now, you know, we're really seeing that these different types of things, you know, the Black Lives Matter Incorporated and, you know, the critical race theory, they're being taught, and it's totally all out in the open. But I think parents still are a little bit shy to make a stink about it and to make their voice heard. And it's really important that parents do that, just like the mom in Nevada. And I think that, you know, as people who are listening to this radio show, you know, talk to your friends about this, talk to your kids about this, you know, talk to everybody that you know about this, because it's so important. And it's something that, you know, if we want to save our country, we really have to get the education back on track. And so I really encourage listeners as well to check out libertyscholar.org. There's a bunch of resources on there that are super helpful for anybody who's looking into alternatives. Some of them are specifically for Florida, but there's a lot of things that I think can pertain to any parents who are just looking to kind of get a little bit more information of what's out there. So definitely check out libertyscholar.org.
Well, thanks, Keith, and thanks, Dominique. We really appreciate your insights. Karen will be back next week. And in the meantime, God bless you and God bless America. This is the Prism of America's Education. We'll talk again next week. But,